Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. This is Desert Oracle Radio Replay, and you are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm your host, Roxana, and I finally found some sunshine today, so I'm recording out at the Missouri headwaters at the ramp that goes on to the river, the headwaters of the Missouri River. So you might be hearing, who knows, a train. You might be hearing some more cars that have joined me here in this little parking loop. But it is good to sit here in the sunshine. I just cherish it. You know, when the days loom gray and gloomy, it's important to keep our sense of wonder going, whether that's finding that little pocket of sunshine or getting out and doing something with people that are doing good things. Well, this week I want to focus on a sense of wonder and the people locally that encourage that sense. And I'll share more about that in the second half hour of the show. But first, here is today's Desert Oracle Radio episode from January 8th, 2019. Here is Interstellar Visitations.
Transmitting from the Mojave Wilderness in Joshua Tree, California, now is the time for Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert, cold and rainy nights we've been enjoying out here. Clouds settling over boulder pile mountains, cabins shrouded in dense white mist. All the natural tanks filled up for the benefit of the wildlife. And the resulting flash floods that take any and all objects for a thrill ride down the usually dry washes, a ride to parts unknown. On the occasion of the new year, I wrote a little something for the website called Popula.com about the mystery of Oumuamua, first interstellar object that our astronomers have ever detected within our solar system. Well, this thing dropped out of the vastness of space right over our sun, and then it did a planetary flyby. We only noticed it on the way out. Well, since I typed up this thing, the news has only gotten stranger when it comes to the subject of interstellar visitors. And we'll get to that. We'll get to this new weird stuff in a few minutes. If you want to read the Popula.com article and see all the strange images and follow the links within, well, just go to our website, desertoracle.com, click Desert Oracle Radio at the top of the page. But it goes something like this. If this were a science fiction story, something about alien contact by Arthur C. Clarke, well, by now it would be apparent to the reader, if not yet to the protagonist. The mysterious object was discovered in October 2017 by Canadian astronomer Robert Warrick, working at an observatory on a mountaintop in Hawaii. It was named Oumuamua, meaning a messenger from afar. A arriving first. Oumuamua is the first interstellar object we've ever noticed. And we noticed it a biblical 40 days after the closest approach to our sun, after which it had passed within 15 million miles of Earth before speeding off towards Jupiter. When Mars hung red and heavy in the summer sky, Mars, with its 9 active missions and active communication with Earth, well, it was over 36 million miles away, its closest point to Earth in years. The trajectory of the visitor confirmed with 222 observations, including the last sightings by the Hubble Space Telescope a year ago, proved that it could only have come from above. It was neither comet nor asteroid, but a cylinder with a soft red glow, mostly made of iron. The artist's impression, by M. Kornmesser of the European Southern Observatory and attached to 100 news articles about the visitor, showed something imperfectly carved, like a Clovis Point arrowhead or a Stone Age phallus. The European Southern Observatory artist who created the image tried to make it look reasonable, but the utter strangeness of the shape could not be disguised. Whether it really looks like an early stone tool or a Neolithic idol is unknown. It might be a perfectly formed rectangle like the monolith in 2001, A Space Odyssey. We don't know. This was the NASA statement. Besides its elongated nature, scientists do not know what kinds of features Oumuamua has on its surface, if any. An elongated shape would explain the rotation behavior, but its exact appearance is unknown. We don't know if it is a mile long or the length of a football field. It's probably somewhere in between. The cylindrical shape is implied. An axis ratio between 5 to 1 or 10 to 1 with a length 5 to 10 times the width. The ratio was computed by decoding Oumuamua's peculiar end-over-end mode of travel, twirling like a baton. But even this tumbling motion is hypothetical. Even our closest views of Oumuamua show no more than a speck of light racing away at 196,000 miles per hour. But the dramatic variations in that light demand an explanation. There's a brilliant pulse every 7.3 hours. The implications were not completely lost on the astronomers. Before settling on the equally ominous Hawaiian name, if it's a scout, then for what army? The astronomers considered calling this first known interstellar object Rama. In Arthur C. Clarke's 1973 novel, Rendezvous with Rama, set in the year 2131, a warning system for near-Earth asteroids detects a strange, cigar-shaped object, the human's name after the Hindu god. It is a perfect and featureless cylinder, and astronauts aboard a research ship are sent to investigate this craft. By its speed and its trajectory, they know it has come from outside the solar system. This first alien ship known to humanity. There is only a short time to investigate before it uses the sun's gravity for a slingshot maneuver to send it back to interstellar space. Clark called this near-Earth warning system Space Guard, which a few years later became the name of the real asteroid warning system it inspired. The Pan-STARRS Observatory in Hawaii that discovered Oumuamua, the Panoramic Survey Telescope and Rapid Response System, is the latest incarnation of Space Guard. The SETI Institute and the Breakthrough Listen Project aimed all available radio antenna at this receding speck of light, including California's Allen Telescope Array at Mount Lassen and West Virginia's Green Bank Telescope, and have found no obvious extraterrestrial radio signals. But as Mr. Spock told Dr. McCoy, when the USS Enterprise could not get a signal from the mysterious cylinder threatening Earth in Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, there are other forms of intelligence on Earth, Doctor. Only human arrogance would assume the message must be meant for man. That was the Whale Probe. Philip K. Dick, both in his 1981 novel Valis and in the Gnostic experiences that inspired it, wondered if a vast, active, living intelligence system was encased in an alien satellite that occasionally nudged humanity forward. An unexplained dark satellite in polar orbit made the news in 1960, and the paranormal journalist John Keel later connected this black night to a string of odd transmissions received by ham radio operators and radio astronomers around the world. By 1973, when Philip Dick was receiving a stream of information from Valis, similar experiences were plaguing conspiracy author Robert Anton Wilson, which he recounts in Cosmic Trigger, The Final Secret of the Illuminati, and creating a space god mythology called the Nine that lured in everybody from Gene Roddenberry to Uri Geller. Those counterculture figures lucky enough to channel these nine ancient extraterrestrials got regular bookings at Big Sur's Esalon Institute, creating a psychic power struggle that dragged on for decades. The Council of Nines said they were a disembodied intelligence that broadcast from an alien satellite. And they were ancient Egyptian gods, too. I kind of think they were whatever you wanted them to be. Well, for all these reasons, cultural, conspiratorial, the appearance of Oumuamua is heavy with symbolism. It is a long-prophesied omen, and humanity could very much use a nudge in the right direction right now. Near the end of 2018, a peculiar scientific paper was published by Harvard Smithsonian astrophysicist Avi Loeb. Along with several pages of equations and computations were the words we were waiting for. Quote, "A more exotic scenario is that Oumuamua may be a fully functional operational probe sent intentionally to Earth vicinity by an alien civilization." Well, even with the careful wording, this was too much for certain journalistic scolds who work the science beat. And that meant lots of snide, know-it-all headlines. You know the ones I'm talking about, the ones that start with no and a comma. No, there is no Santa Claus, and nothing is ever fun. Well, should anything happen, should the aliens arrive, these dullards will be remembered like the Native American scouts who brushed off the threat of strange ships surveilling the Atlantic coastline in the late 1400s. What will first contact look like? Will we even survive it? Many people believe extraterrestrial intelligence has been interacting with the creatures of Earth for a very long time, and that this contact has been either deliberately hidden by a government that is otherwise utterly dysfunctional or historically misconstrued. Ancient aliens, etc. These are matters of faith, and not fact, so far anyway. Until an ancient artifact turns out to be a stargate or a spaceship awaiting voice activation like some very patient Alexa unit, we just don't know. And by the way, if you've got a bunch of voice-activated devices in your house connected round the clock to completely immoral internet companies, I do suggest you stomp those devices into the bits of garbage they were destined to become. And empty the dustpan into your recycling bin. Yes, the government will spy on you if it so chooses, some sort of government somewhere. But you sure make it easier when you purchase and install the surveillance equipment yourself. Well, there were enough bizarre occurrences in the latter half of 2018 to fill the first act of an alien invasion movie. Sightings by commercial pilots, the bold young scientist being scoffed at for his alien theory, clumsy cover-ups by the feds, public panics, and high anxiety. As in Close Encounters of the Third Kind, which portrayed the UFO panic of the 1970s with historical precision, a series of seemingly mundane oddities builds up to a realization that it's really happening. If this is the year that a technologically advanced culture makes official contact, we will mostly be ready for it. Why, for instance, was the National Solar Observatory in New Mexico suddenly evacuated and shut down by the federal government for a week and a half in early September? Why did many solar observatory webcams and public internet pages go dark at the same time? Even the county sheriff's department was kept in the dark. On the ABC 7 News in El Paso, Otero County Sheriff Benny House bitterly complained about the Bureau's handling of the bizarre situation. Quote, "I have a responsibility to protect my citizens. I think it's paramount that we know what the threat is so that we can provide safety." Well, after staff and their families were allowed to return to the Solar Observatory and the Visitor Center and the U.S. Post Office there, the FBI put out a vague and bizarre statement that the shutdown and the frenzied evacuation of the solar observatory was due to something about somebody maybe accused of maybe downloading child pornography, which resulted in no charges and no prosecution and no attempt at a satisfactory excuse for a bizarre news story that had gone international and inspired a real panic. And then began the busiest season for mainstream media UFO reports in decades. With the tone set by the New York Times coverage of the Pentagon's secret UFO study program on December 17 of 2017, glowing auras and black money, the Pentagon's mysterious UFO program. Yes, Navy pilots had chased featureless and acrobatic aircraft off the coast of San Diego and Florida, and Harry Reid had authorized a secret Defense Department study of the phenomena. And DIA investigators had spent time on a haunted cattle ranch in northeastern Utah as part of the study. And there were mentions of recovered alloys, recovered alloys kept in a secret Nevada warehouse, materials of an unknown origin that sickened researchers. Right there on the front page of the New York Times, the crews of three commercial flights over the east coast of Ireland reported strange craft early on November 9, 2018. It was moving so fast, a British Airways pilot told air traffic control. It appeared on our left-hand side and rapidly veered to the north. We saw a bright light and then it just disappeared at a very high speed. We were just wondering what it might be. A Virgin Airways pilot reported two bright lights that seemed to bank over to the right and climb away at speed. After hearing that description, another pilot radioed in from a third commercial airliner. Glad it wasn't just me. Next was Gatwick. A baffling travel nightmare at Christmas time with hundreds of flights grounded due to mysterious drones that no one managed to photograph or catch or shoot down. Despite UK police and military swarming the airport, drone hobbyists complained to the media that it was impossible for a consumer drone to fly all night with blinding lights like the Gatwick craft. A couple of suspects were taken in and quickly released without charge, patsies. A Gatwick UFO was trending on Instagram and Twitter. The Express newspaper claimed Theresa May was holding emergency UFO meetings with her rattled and incompetent government. If you were watching for such things in the last days of 2018, you had much to choose from. There were the transformer explosions that accompanied bizarre sights in the sky, not just over New York, but also over Juarez across the border from El Paso, and over the New Orleans suburb of Kenner, Louisiana. Then there was the dark pyramid rotating slowly over the Pentagon with witnesses in Northern Virginia capturing the strange sight from multiple angles. Minus Oumuamua, these are the usual panics and mysteries of daily life. Hoaxes and ignorance of airplane lights or fireworks displays. But the addition of this possibly alien scout ship at least leaves the possibility that this year, 2019, will be the strangest year yet. Well, in the very few short weeks since that was published as a cheerily ominous New Year's essay, the strange news about Oumuamua has only increased. Harvard astronomy chairman Avi Loeb got a lot of guff from the lesser lights of science Twitter when the paper he co-authored made the news. I mean, what kind of scientist would come up with a reasonable hypothesis suggesting the utterly bizarre movement and speed and shape and trajectory of a type of object never before detected by humanity might be evidence of an interstellar space probe? An interstellar space probe deliberately sent to perform reconnaissance in our solar system. I mean the nerve of the guy, the gall of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics chair to look at something never seen before and to suggest it might be something artificial. This is what he told the New Yorker magazine this week. Last year, I wrote a paper about cosmology where there was an unusual result, which showed that perhaps the gas in the universe was much colder than we expected. And so we postulated that maybe dark matter has some property that makes the gas cooler. And nobody cares. Nobody is worried about it. No one says it is not science. Everyone says that it is mainstream to consider dark matter a substance we have never seen. That's completely fine. It doesn't bother anyone. This is more rain than we have had up here in many a January. Let's go on up and check the natural tanks and the rocks. There should be plenty of water for the coyotes and bobcat, mountain lions. UFOs are certainly real. The sky is certainly populated by a number of things that we cannot and have not identified. But I don't know if that has anything to do with space aliens, do you? Well, the government is still shut down. National parks are still keeping rangers at home, keeping them home without a paycheck. And the chaos and the collapse continues. I guess that's kind of like saying the Roman Empire is still falling. Well, let's talk about something happier. It's a happy thing to sit around a campfire and have some dubious ranger tell you a lot of stories. Well, you can have something like that on January 31 at the Ace Hotel in Palm Springs. That's a Thursday night. Come join us around the campfire for Desert Oracle Campfire Stories. Thanks to Red Blue, Black Silver for the nice soundscapes that make up the middle of our program. You can write to us if you like to. The address is P.O. Box 1735 in Joshua Tree. And you have been listening to Desert Oracle Radio, broadcasting from Joshua Tree, California. Friday nights at 10 p.m. across the Great Mojave Wilderness on KCDZ 107.7 FM. Turn on your radio and listen to it from Amboy to Zizix. Available everywhere as a podcast and distributed worldwide by Public Radio Exchange, PRX. Thank you for spending some of your night with Desert Oracle Radio. I'm your host, Ken Lane. Good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, and streaming at kgvm.org. The reason I chose interstellar visitations for our Desert Oracle Radio episode today is because of 3-Eye Atlas that showed up recently. I think they were watching it in December. It was supposed to come closest to us, I believe. Anyway, I dug this up from space.com. Now, as of November 28th, they had this article by, I think it's Shamila Kumar, something like that. Anyway, she writes about the 4 key things NASA just revealed about the interstellar comet 3-Eye Atlas. Number 1, they said this object is a comet. And The quote here is, "We very much want to find signs of life in the universe." They're pretty sure it's a comet. They said this object is a comet, and it looks and behaves like a comet, and all evidence points to it being a comet. This was from a NASA Associate Administrator, Amit Kashatriya, I believe. Number two, a solar system-wide watchtower. From the moment of its discovery, scientists knew from 3I Atlas's trajectory that it sat on the opposite side of the sun from Earth, making ground-based observations difficult. To compensate, NASA convened a coordinated planning session in August, bringing together teams from more than 20 missions to mount a fleet-wide campaign to track the interstellar comet. In the end, dozens of spacecraft from Earth orbit to Mars and beyond worked in concert, each with a different vantage point. Number three, a rare window into distant older star systems. Scientists say that 3I Atlas has likely been traveling through interstellar space for a long time, based on how fast it was moving upon entering the solar system. Statler said the circumstantial evidence points to the comet originating in a very old planetary system, possibly one older than our own. Number four, intriguing chemical clues. So far, 3I Atlas has behaved exactly as a comet should as it warms near the sun, shedding water and carbon dioxide. But with some intriguing twists, scientists have detected a higher than usual ratio of carbon dioxide to water compared with typical solar system comets, as well as gas unusually rich in nickel relative to iron. Both findings are scientifically compelling and worth further investigation, researchers said. The dust around the comet also shows slightly atypical properties, suggesting its grain sizes differ from those of local comets. One especially curious behavior was the dust was initially blown toward the sunward side before solar radiation gradually pushed it back, a longer and less common sequence than scientists usually observe in homegrown comets. We're still learning even more about what questions we still need to ask, says Tom Statler, the lead scientist at NASA for solar system small bodies. And this, of course, is the scientific process in action, he says. And then a more recent article on space.com said that space fans hoping that the intruder from beyond the solar system known as Comet 3I Atlas is actually an alien spacecraft may be disappointed by new research that could close the book on this speculation once and for all. Astronomers used the Green Bank telescope employed in the Breakthrough Listen Extraterrestrial Signal Hunting Astronomy Project to search 3I Atlas for measurable signs of technology from extraterrestrial civilizations or techno-signatures. Though the hunt came up empty, the fact that 3I Atlas is only the third known object found in the solar system after entering from interstellar space, the others being 1I Oumuamua, seen in 2017, and 2I Borisov, detected in 2019, means that it is still an object of great fascination, albeit a natural one. We all would have been thrilled to find techno signatures coming from 3i Atlas, but they're just not there. Lead researcher Benjamin Jacobson Beal from the University of California, Berkeley, told Space.com. Finding no signals was the result we expected due to the significant evidence for 3i Atlas being a comet with only natural features. The evidence was against 3i Atlas being one such probe, but we would have been remiss not to check. Jacobson Beal explained that scientists have even discussed conducting this exact kind of exploration using probes of our own. An example of this is the Breakthrough Starshot Initiative, a concept that proposes to launch thousands of extremely lightweight probes toward Alpha Centauri, the nearest star system to our sun. And then there's a quote here, there are compelling reasons to think a spacefaring species would send probes to other star systems as a way to learn more about their stellar neighborhood, Jacobson Beal added. And I'm just going to add a comment that there's a lot of mistrust out there as to what comes down to us officially from any agency. So just keep your eyes and ears open. Be sure of the source where you're getting your information. Yeah, if you want to know what really is true. And it is tough to find out these days, I gotta admit. Okay, on to the next subject. As I said before, there are some people of our region who are doing good things and keeping our sense of wonder and awe alive. I hope you have a pen or a recorder of some sort nearby, because here are a few opportunities for you to remember, and there will be some links to register. First off, Random Acts of Silliness has a willow-framed lantern workshop. You can build a willow-framed lantern and decorate with tissue paper at the Gallatin County Fairgrounds Exhibit Building 4. The next two dates coming up for that are Saturday, January 24th from 4 to 7 p.m. and Sunday, January 25th, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Just show up for this one, no need to register. And there are more workshops planned for February 2. And these creations will take part in the Menagerie of the Imaginary Lantern Parade at the Gallatin Regional Park, February 21st, 2026. And I'll say more about that and that scheduling in February. And here are a couple lectures you won't want to miss. Museum of the Rockies on Thursday, January 15th, 2026, from 5:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. It's a vertical history of the West, Devil's Tower, Bear Lodge, Empire, and the Rise of American Climbing with Michael Reedy. It's R-E-I-D-Y. I hope I'm saying that right. This is one of the Rosenberry Donahue lectures on the American West. And the blurb on that says, established in 1906 as our first national monument, Devil's Tower is a geological wonder. Its human history can tell us a lot about our fascination with seemingly mystical landscapes, our initial contemplation of deep time, and our modern ideas of wilderness. It also reveals a more hidden history of nationalism, empire, and indigenous disposition of land. Reedy will go through the surprising history of climbing at Devil's Tower National Monument from its initial first ascent through its more recent explosion in popularity. This lecture will reveal how this remarkable monument represents the history of the rise of American climbing more broadly, but also how Devil's Tower can stand in for many other contested vertical geographies in the West, where more than just climbers are on the rise. And the speaker bio for Professor Michael Reedy goes that he teaches at the History of Philosophy Department at Montana State University, good old MSU, go Bobcats. His research focuses on the history of science, exploration, and mountaineering. An award-winning professor, Reedy has taught students at MSU for over a decade about history, science, and human interaction with the natural world. The event, the lecture, will be held in the Hager Auditorium at the Museum of the Rockies, and it's included with your membership, or it's $5 for a non-member. Registration is required, and you can find that link at museumoftherockies.org/events/devils-tower-bear-lodge-empire-and-the-rise-of-american-climbing-with-michael-reedy. And Michael Reedy is spelled M-I-C-H-A-E-L, and then Reedy is R-E-I-D-Y. So you can see why I told you I have something to take notes. Okay, we're going to continue with the events. A presentation from the Montana Native Plant Society, and it presents Old Growth Forest Communities of Montana. This is a virtual presentation. It's going to be January 20th at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. Ashley Martins will guide this online presentation on Montana's eco-regional old growth forest communities and share how old growth can be recognized, conserved, and enjoyed through the Old Growth Forest Network's programs. So this is a Zoom meeting on January 20th, 2026 at 7 p.m. Mountain Time, as I said before, and you register in advance for this meeting at https://us02web.zoom.us/meeting/register/N(sk)KS, which are both lowercase, and then Y, Q, 3, Lowercase V, Lowercase A, Capital T, the number 3, Lowercase C, Lowercase X, Capital O, Lowercase U, Capital T, Lowercase W. After registering, you will receive a confirmation email containing information about joining the meeting. Montana Natural Plant Society also has a YouTube channel where you can view past presentations. Just search YouTube for Montana Native Plant Society. And our local chapter also has a plant trivia night at the Map Brewery in Bozeman. This month, it's January 13th from 6 to 8 p.m., plant trivia night in Bozeman. So the blurb says Tuesday, January 13th, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., plant trivia night. Join us for a fun-filled evening with trivia questions ranging from highly technical to pop cultural. Friendly for all levels of know-how. This will take place at MAP Brewing. Folks can order drinks and appetizers downstairs before heading upstairs to match wits with Question Masters, Valley of Flowers members Bryce Pease and Jared Trilling. Naturally, prizes will be awarded, and it's open to the public. And finally, on January 12th, from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m., Sacagawea Audubon is going to present a lecture, Understanding the Mysterious Great Gray Owl, with Arcata Levitt. Monday evening, January 12th, this is the meeting for Sacagawea Audubon. The social starts at 6:30 and the program begins at 7 p.m. at Hope Lutheran Church, 2152 West Graff Street in Bozeman. And the blurb says, what is known about the elusive great gray owl locally? They are known as the ghosts of the forest. Throughout their range here in the Intermountain West and the boreal forests and wooded bogs of the far north. Though not our heaviest owl, Strix nebulosa is our largest owl, and many would say most impressive. Their enormous size and silence, combined with the glare from their piercing yellow eyes, captivates the onlooker. Those lucky enough to encounter a great gray owl are unlikely to ever forget. Their sheer size and distinctive eyes make them unlikely to be mistaken for their smaller dark-eyed cousins, the barred and spotted owls, where their ranges overlap. Have you been lucky enough to see one of these forest ghosts? Come and share your ghost story. Join us as Arcata Levitt, the second recipient of the Sacagawea Audubon Society Bob Moore Scholarship, informs us about the research she is conducting and you are funding, so that we may know more about these secretive creatures. And then about Arcata. Arcata Levitt is a master's student in the Becker Lab at Montana State University studying great gray owls, Strix nebulosa, in southwest Montana. Her research is part of a collaboration with Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, the U.S. Forest Service, and MSU to evaluate great gray owl nesting habitat characteristics and investigate the efficacy of using bioacoustic monitoring to locate nests and evaluate productivity. This effort aims to provide wildlife managers with tools to target survey and conservation efforts and improve our understanding of this enigmatic species. Arcata received her Bachelor of Science in Fisheries and Wildlife Science from Oregon State University, and before coming to MSU, she worked with songbirds, small mammals, and loons in the greater Yellowstone ecosystem. This event is free and open to the public. To watch this program virtually, please register at https://register.gotowebinar.com/register/7204168220182258014. Now, continuing with our theme of awe and wonder, from the Mayo Clinic's article titled The Power of Awe, they write, gazing at a sunset, seeing a close friend reach a goal she sought for years, walking your daughter down the aisle at her wedding. These experiences have something in common. They inspire a sense of awe. Feelings of warmth and positivity flood your mind in a way that doesn't happen when doing laundry. Experiencing awe carries significant benefits to physical and mental health, according to research. Doctors still don't fully understand the underlying mechanisms, but studies show positive effects. Reduced inflammation, lower stress, and improved heart rate and diastolic blood pressure in people who report regularly feeling wonder and awe. Getting out in nature is the most common way for people to feel that sense of awe, But it's not the only way. Relationships with other people can produce feelings of awe. Experiencing art, music, or other forms of personal expression can produce it too. Mayo Clinic experts say that you should make a point of having awe-inspiring experiences, especially in these times of distractions, worries, and distress. Some ways to focus a part of each day on inspiring awe include keeping a portfolio, either virtually or on paper, of awe-inspiring quotes and pictures, practicing meditation or similar mind-centering activities, bringing a sense of wonder to small, daily things that often get overlooked, such as a bumblebee exploring a flower, a grandchild's delight, or an elegantly crafted piece of furniture. Today, when I was here at the Missouri Headwaters State Park, walking along the river, I noticed something I've never seen before, and I think it was a moment of awe. I've never seen, in the shallows, there are little bubbles that are frozen. Frozen bubbles of air, I suppose. I couldn't figure out what they were at first, and the water was clear enough that I could see them clearly. The first one I saw, I thought maybe was a buried little bottle of clear glass, but it wasn't. I found a smaller one because I thought, well, I don't know what these are. What if they're fish eggs? And when I found some smaller ones and I touched them with the stick, they released the bubble of air and the ice floated down the stream. And then as I saw more of them, I realized, oh, this is somehow little bubbles of ice under the water. And that's a thing. Anyway, I hope you make some good discoveries soon to increase your sense of awe and wonder. It's good for you. Our background audio today has been the sounds of the Missouri Headwaters State Park and the river, the mother, the Missouri River that flows through it. Thanks to Red, Blue, Black, Silver, and to Ken Lane for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. And thanks all the volunteers, supporters, and underwriters of KGVM, and to you. Do you have a story about a moment of awe in your life? I'd love to hear it. Leave a text or voicemail for me at 406-424-6246. This program broadcasts on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are archived for you on the kgvm.org website. Well, don't give up on the snow. Watch the skies and keep doing good things and sweet dreams. Stay well, and I'll see you next week. Paul Simon takes us out today with his song from the 25th anniversary deluxe edition of his collection Graceland with Boy in the Bubble.
And the sun was beating on the soldiers by the side of the road. There was a bright light, a shattering of shop windows. The bomb in the baby carriage was wired to the radio. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to a song. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder and
don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. It was a dry wind, and it swept across the desert and curled into the circle of blue. And the dead sand falling on the children, the mothers and the fathers and the automatic earth. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in a corner of the sky. These are the days of miracle and wonder. And don't cry, baby, don't cry, don't cry. It's a turnaround jump shot, it's everybody jump start. It's every generation throws a hero up the pop charts. Medicine is magical and magical is art. Think of the boy in the bubble and the baby with the babbling heart. And I believe these are days of lasers in the jungle. Lasers in the jungle somewhere. Staccato signals of constant information. A loose affiliation of millionaires and billionaires and baby. These are the days of miracle and wonder. This is the long distance call. The way the camera follows us in slow-mo. The way we look to us all, oh yeah. The way we look to a distant constellation that's dying in the corner of the sky. These are the days